We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 325. You know, West Coast baseball is hard. It's hard to stay up late, but it's a little easier when the scrappy ragtag bunch of Yankees, the replacement Yankees, the New York Scranton Rail Riders, are beating teams. Six in a row, baby.
I mean, how do you come back from five down in the fashion that they did on the road and just scrap together those runs? Because if you saw what actually happened on the field, you would never believe that they scored five runs. It wasn't like they were hitting the ball out of the park. They weren't stringing together doubles.
No, there's no bases clearing doubles in that.
There was
rally.
None of that. There was just a bunch of you know, good at bats and a little bit of grind here and there, some timely hitting. But yeah, yep. It was a very strange comeback, but it was nevertheless a comeback.
Well, it's twofold, Scott. First of all, the Angels suck.
Yeah.
And second of all, grit and balls. Grit and balls are getting it done, grinding it out. That's the mentality of this team right now. No Judge, no Stanton, no Severino, no Hicks, no Andujar. We get Gary Sanchez back, but Clint Frazier goes down. It's like one gut punch after the other. It doesn't friggin' matter.
Well, I mean, Gary Sanchez was there, but he struck out four times. So we had the
We had a little
golden sombrero action with the guy that comes back. So it doesn't, you know, what's the difference?
Getting that
what's
out
the
of
difference his, at this point?
Getting that out of the system early. That's okay. You got to cleanse the system. It's like flushing out all the toxins after a hangover.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's interesting when you see the guys who come back just don't even contribute. So it wasn't even the fact that, and it's probably because I said, as soon as I saw that Sanchez was coming back on this trip, I put in our Facebook group for the show, I said, huge series. Gary Sanchez is going to put the team on his back, going to carry his team. We're going to see, you know, the first 2 months that we ever saw of Gary Sanchez. Like that's the guy we're going to see, like all time great, you know, going up against Babe Ruth numbers. That's the guy we're going to see. No. Four strikeouts.
This is just one game. You know, you can't judge baseball on one game, Scott.
It's four strikeouts. It's because I said he's going to dominate.
When, at what point in this show, in this just larger Bronx Pinstripes thing, bubble, are you going to stop making predictions?
When am I going to fall asleep in the middle of this show because I stay awake too late because of these stupid West Coast trips? That's the better question, because I was awake until 3 a.m. last night, and the night before that, 1, and the night before that, 3, because I'm stupid. That's the big thing, and I can't help it.
It's funny because the team's winning 3 in a row on the West Coast, 6 in a row overall. Half the names in the lineup you can't pick out of a lineup. Like these are, like we said, this is split squad, middle of March, spring training action. So it's kind of funny that they're winning and most of the Yankees fan base is probably not seeing half of these games.
And that's the shame too, because it's actually a lot of fun. That's part of the problem is that they're not just laying down with all of these injuries. The problem being them playing on the West Coast in 3 hours difference. Like I'm staying awake for these because I have a horrible addiction to the New York Yankees, and I'm seeing young guys play baseball really well at a high level, and they're playing together, and it gets me very excited, and I can't sleep when that happens. So there's a lot of people missing some very interesting, like, passion felt baseball.
And the thing I love, so Monday and last night, Wednesday night's games, are two games that the Yankees could have easily rolled over. And I wouldn't, you know, the diehard fan doesn't give them a pass, but in reality, they could get a pass when they're dealing with all these injuries. Monday night, they get a lead in extra innings in the 12th inning after playing extra innings the day before, flying across the country. You get a lead, and then Chapman blows a save in the 12th inning. Right then and there, the team could have just rolled over and died. They didn't. They came back. They won that game with the help of a little drunk Angels play in the 14th inning. But it doesn't matter. They won the game in the 14th inning. Last night, huge hole early. Sabathia doesn't have it. He gets him through five. Johnny Lasagna comes out, gives you a little bit of length in the bullpen to keep you in that game. And then they scratch and claw their way back. Freaking hidden ball trick.
I couldn't believe my eyes. I felt like I looked away for like 20 minutes, and then I went back to, like, I literally looked away for like a split second, and Wade's out, and then I'm like, whoa, what just happened? And then I'm watching all the replay, and I see generic Didi go over there and put a tag on.
Did you just call him generic Didi?
Simmons, yeah. He's the second guy from the islands. Not Didi's number one, and Simmons is the guy riding his coattails.
Oh, that's so offensive and so good.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, they have how many professional athletes do they have come from Curacao?
A lot considering the population.
Yeah, it's some like insane percentage, right? It's like
the highest percentage because there's such a small population, but they're all just filthy at baseball.
Yeah, well, I feel like Simmons got some fanfare because he was and still is. I mean, he's an unbelievable glove.
He's a great player.
And then you know, he turned a little bit of offense, but you know, like Didi's the guy. Didi should be the guy from that island. So
I like it, generic Didi.
He puts the tag on him, and I mean, it's like Tyler Wade.
Someone was talking
about like a brain fart. Like no, that was an actual fart. Like he literally just like he farted and his leg came up, and he put a tag on. He's just like waiting for it to happen.
Do you hate that? Not the hidden ball trick. I like the hidden ball trick. I think that's fun. Like, if you can pull it off, more power to you. But do you hate the only way that works is the replay, zoom in, monitoring every split second? And it's just the same thing for, like, when guys keep tags on players that might come off the bag. Their hand might come off the bag for a split second. Like, that is stuff before replay that never got called out. And is that, I hate saying this,
in the spirit of the rule?
Right. Like, the guy beat the play to the bag, he's safe. If he comes off the bag for a split second, I mean, I guess by the letter of the rule, yes, he's out.
But as
baseball fans, do we really like that? Is that how we want the game to be? Is that what we want replay to be used?
I mean, it's not even close. The answer is no. The answer is 1,000% no, because it makes the little details like that excruciating. And again, you say not in the spirit of the rules and why it's there, but that's important because a lot of the baseball that we watch has to be tolerated by fans. And I think when you're looking for minute details like that, first of all, umpires in a million years would never pick it up. Like literally you had to zoom in and look for a crack there. Yeah. So no, the hidden ball trick, it's dumb in the first place, but
no, it's not.
It is. It's stupid.
Come on, it's fun.
No, it's
not. It's if the Yankees did it, you'd love it.
Fine, but it's still stupid. I mean, I would still probably the next day say it's dumb. Like in the moment, I'm like, yeah, it's hilarious and got him. Like, haha.
Yeah.
But it's really dumb.
If you can do it, do it.
It's a really dumb thing. But the thing is, when you're trying to find the small details and on the hidden ball trick as well, like if the umpires don't see the hidden ball trick, bro, like you didn't do it. Okay, like that didn't count. Like for real. If Wade is walking off the bag to like talk to a coach or going to the dugout or, you know, tying his shoes, fine. Like caught you sleeping. He literally was just like shifting his feet. Where's the line
here? You almost could have argued that when he places the tag on his back, it's almost like he kind of gave him a nudge, right?
I mean, yeah, he was just like sitting there waiting like, "Oh, I don't know. It was dumb.
The thing is, it didn't cause the Yankees to roll over and die.
In fact, do you know what it did? It turned Tyler Dean Wade into the freaking Hulk, and he comes out there and he starts making unbelievable plays, and he goes out there and gets a single. He actually got a hit. the ball went and rolled through the infield and went into the outfield.
It touched outfield grass.
Yes, and he got on base, stole second, and just waited for LeMahieu to hit the ball. Like, I'm sitting there watching Wade on second base. LeMahieu's up. I'm like, LeMahieu's going to go to right field. It's going to be a single to right field. First pitch, or the first one he fouls off, you could see that he just missed going to right field. Like, the dude was wait, and put a good swing on it and just missed. Next pitch, right field. It was like, if Derek Jeter were in the box, you wouldn't know any different. I mean, it was exactly like you'd see.
The emotion that the team was showing late in that game, I think tells you a lot about the men, because Tyler Wade knows that he's only here because of injuries. Mike Tauchman knows he's only in the starting lineup because of injuries. Mike Ford's only here because of injuries. All these guys, Gio Urshela is only playing because Andujar's out. Tario Estrada, like, who has gotten a couple at-bats, is only on the roster because of it. These guys know they're not going to be here in October, but they're still fired up and they're still glad to pick up the team when the team is without an all-star caliber lineup on the IL.
I mean, you know, we've been talking about this next man up mentality now for a little while. And one, I finally made a t-shirt, next man up. So that's out there. Go buy that. It looks good. I did that last night at 3 a.m. too. It also kept me awake, which is stupid.
Yeah, there's a lot of next man up t-shirts out there. The difference with ours is it actually looks good.
I didn't even see the other ones, to be completely honest. I have like blinders on when I'm on Twitter and things like that. So
they're not good. They're not looking good.
Most of them are not. But that's it. That's the mentality. Like, that is it. That's the thing, you know, like these guys understand that it's like, it's playing Iron Man, you know, it's playing a man down, whatever cliche you want to use. That's what they're doing. The young guys are stepping up and playing and fitting in this role. And it's fun to watch. Like, it's bringing me back to like the old school baseball. It's bringing me back to when the kids came up, and the Yankees traded away their guys. It's that type of baseball, and it's not the home run you're seeing a lot. Like, that's still happening. Voit's still hitting home runs out of the park. But it's the, you know, the seventh inning of last night, which was a Mike Ford walk, a Gio Urshela single, a Tauchman walk, a Wade four-pitch walk with the bases loaded RBI, LeMahieu sack fly, Voit fielder's choice RBI. Like, that's how they scored the runs. That's unbelievable. That does not happen with all of our starters there, which is kind of crazy when you think about the fact that that comeback in that fashion doesn't happen with those other players. Not to say that this is better by any means, but I'm saying it's a different style is all I'm saying.
It's a different style. Yeah. I was going to get to this later in the show, but there's this notion I've seen going around that, oh, these replacement Yankees are better than the real Yankees. And can we just stop with that?
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Like, people are saying, oh, these guys are hitting with runners in scoring position. No, they're not. They're still not hitting with runners in scoring position. Last night, they were 2-for-9 with runners in scoring position. Austin Romine, 5-for-16. He's the best guy with runners in scoring position of the replacement Yankees, yeah. Because Tauchman's 2-for-9, Urshela's 3-for-8, Tyler Wade is 1-for-10, Higgy doesn't have a hit. And then you look at the starters, Voit 6-for-19. That's good. LeMahieu 6-for-16 before last night. So now he's 7-for-20. That's good. Glaber 5-for-19. Gardner, not very good. 1-for-12. Judge was 5-for-11. And Gary Sanchez was 2-for-10. So it's hilarious the spin zone that Yankees Twitter goes into with this kind of stuff. And I love that the team is winning with this ragtag bunch. Don't get me wrong. But this is not better than the real guys.
No, I mean, it's really not disputable. It's fun to watch. It's different. I think it's a breath of fresh air when you're watching the type of baseball. If you like that kind of thing, if you're into it. But a lot of people just,
not that there's anything, wrong,
there's anything
with
wrong with that kind of baseball. You know, everybody's still pining for that home run ball, and you're getting it, you know, just not as frequently.
But the thing is, wouldn't it be nice if there was both?
I mean, of course it would be nice if there was both. Like, that's right. The ultimate. That's what makes a World Series championship level team.
That's what the Red Sox had in 2018.
That's what the Houston Astros had when they went from, you know, last or close to last in contact percentage to first, and then they won the World Series. I mean, like, there's an absolute trend when you're looking at these teams that are competing deep into October, and a lot of it has to do with, you know, moving their base runners, getting on base, making contact, and also getting the timely home run. But there's a bunch of these things that have to be combined.
So strikeouts, there's only one thing that can happen when a guy strikes out, right? Yeah. It's an out. I understand when you put the ball in play, there's a chance for an out, but there's also a chance the other team messes up.
Right.
There's also a chance you get a fielder's choice or you get runners advancing. Things happen when you put bat on ball. I know it sounds so stupid to say, but it's so true. Like, you outlined that rally last night when the Yankees came back. No big hits, no doubles into the gap, no home runs to center field. Just put bat on ball. Get on base, put bat on ball.
Yeah, or just get on base. Yeah, but yeah. Fielder's choice, sacrifice flies. We saw these things, and they were advancing runners. There was the sack fly. Tyler Wade tagged from first base. Like, everybody tagged on that play. He tagged from first. And I think Tauchman was ahead of him, tagged from second. So, like, they're playing good baseball in the sense that they're taking advantage of these outs as well. They're playing well on the base paths. They're taking advantage of these things. So you got to, and that's the other thing. Like when you're playing with this type of roster that we have right now, they have to be tight, right? Like they got to play good defense. They got to run the bases well. They can't do stupid things like the whole hidden ball trick. That was annoying because there's going to be like a little bit of a stain on what happened, because there's going to be this, you know, Tyler Wade got caught with his pants down on the base path. Like, did he? I mean, I guess technically he did, and he was called out, but it was kind of a bullshit way to go about that. But you know, he got to second base by tagging up on a fly ball, you know, from first. Like, not many guys do that.
That's a rally killer, and that's a game in the first couple weeks of April this team loses. And then you look back at that hidden ball trick and you say, well, there's another wasted opportunity. There's another runners left on base because they're sitting there with their thumb up their ass on the bases. Like, this team is known for making outs on the base paths.
Yeah, but again,
and I understand that's I know that's an annoying one, but when you're losing games, you put your finger on that and you say bad.
Right. Oh no, right? No kidding. No. There's no doubt about it. And if they had lost that game, it would have been, you know, because he was the tying run. He was the go ahead run. so he would have he would have been the guy. Like if that had ended it, there would have been a whole lot of what ifs.
He would have been the goat. He would have been the scapegoat.
A lot of what ifs. But yeah.
Yeah. It's early. It's early. We're doing this.
It's early. It's late. I don't even know what it is anymore for me.
Let's reset. Let's talk about the series, a couple other things from the series. So one more game to go. They've already won three games of the four. Beautiful. They've not let Mike Trout beat them. He has one hit in the series. Yes, he's been on base every day, but that's okay. Like I said, walk him. I do not want Mike Trout to be the guy that beat you. I know he can hit the baseball far. I don't need you to show me he can hit the baseball far. So I love that they have held him down. I was nervous in that at bat on Monday night when he was going up against Holder, because Holder had been a guy who was struggling, but he pitched really well late in that game.
I think we're catching a little bit of a luck with Trout too, kind of in the timing that we're getting him. Like,
he's
a little banged up, coming off of an injury, definitely not right at the plate. You can see that. He made a tremendous play last night in the field. It was definitely run preventing play in center field, and like barely caught that ball. It was a tremendous play. So I think we're catching a little bit of a break in the timing of what we're catching.
It's
him,
about
which
time.
Is fine.
It's about time this team caught a break.
Yeah. I mean, it's that's good news.
Hap early in that start on Monday, we were looking for something. So he found a trend. He found something in that Boston game, right? He turned it around in the middle of that Boston game. He started to go more to his two-seamer because his four-seamer was getting hit. Well, he pitched seven innings. He did give up only one home run, but it was seven innings. It was clean, especially late in that game. And you look at his pitch mix. He threw 75% of his pitches were hard. 44 seam fastballs, 27 two-seam fastballs. 75% of his pitches were 90 miles an hour, like 89, 90 miles an hour or above. So he just said, I'm throwing my fastball. You guys can't hit it.
But and one of the, well, here's the deal. He located his fastball. That's the biggest thing. If he locates his fastball, similar to Paxton, they don't have the same fastball, but they both work off of the fastball. And when Hap is not able to locate, which has been the case early in the season for him, then you know, everything else is just not as good, and he struggles. And when the ball goes over the plate, he gets hit hard. And you're seeing now on that, he was able to locate that fastball, he was able to put it where he wanted, and then work off of it. So it's good news that he was able to give up that that home run, but still give a really good. It's not good news that he gave up a home run. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying is that he was able to give up the home run, but still go out and give a good depth and a good start. So I think a lot of people in the second inning were like, "Oh, here we go again." But no, it was a good outing, and we need him to be that guy, because he is that boring dude who goes out there and gives you seven innings, and we need that.
Mm-hmm. Boring J. Hap. Yeah. Yeah, I love it. And he's going to give up home runs. He's a fly ball pitcher who utilizes his four-seam fastball up in the zone. He's going to give up home runs. But what he was doing early in the season, he was giving up a lot of home runs.
Right.
And he was giving up home runs with men on base. You just can't live that way. So, and this was a game, like I said, that the Yankees did not roll over and die, because you have your closer in the 12th inning. You expect him to lock it down, and he doesn't. But the team comes out, and they take advantage of a Lucroy just boneheaded play, just airmails it over the first baseman's head on the Gleyber Torres strikeout. It looked like he was drunk. He was stumbling around. Then Gleyber advances to second on like a wild pitch, pass ball in the dirt. So they took advantage of the Angels just falling asleep late in that game.
And again, like that's kind of more to the point I was just making is when you have a team like this, you have to capitalize on the other guys, on the other team's mistakes, on their failures. And if you're not capitalizing on those, because you're not going to score, you know, the same amount of runs, the ball ain't flying out of the park like it normally does with your full roster of guys there. So you have to take advantage of these little things and make sure that they pay for it. So good on them, man. Like and that's another guy like Gleyber Torres. Taking advantage of small things. He's been struggling, you know, ever since he got robbed of that 3-run home run. Like it's been a bit of a struggle for him, and we're starting to see, I think on Tuesday night he's starting to get back into it, get that ball going the other way, starting to use the opposite field again, and starting to see him get right. Because if this team is going to succeed in this six game winning streak is going to be something that they can sustain, Gleyber Torres is going to be a big piece of that.
Absolutely, yeah, because he's one of the few starters still left. Yeah. Knock on wood. And then Tuesday, we thought, okay, here we go. Easy win. And then Chad Green comes in late in that game after Herman was extremely impressive. We're going to talk about Herman in a second. But Chad Green sent himself to the minors with that performance. And the performance recently, I think, I have a stat in here. So I saw, I forget who tweeted this out, but in 2017, Chad Green allowed 14 runs in 69 innings. This year, he allowed 14 runs in 7 2/3 innings. So the dude is completely lost. I think he's saying it's mechanical. I will buy that, but I also think there's a certain point where baseball becomes mental, and I think it's also a mental thing for him at this point.
So Chad Green was even talking about it. They mentioned this on the broadcast last night, saying that, you know, they when talking to him about his last outing, the last implosion, the first one was a 5-run lead. The second one was a 6-run lead. Couldn't hold it. Obviously, he gave up the grand slam, but also said that his mechanics, he felt good. He felt like he was in a good spot. So he didn't know what it was. So that is a guy that's completely lost, has no idea what's happening. And mentally gone, like just gone.
And if you're not going to use him, if you're not going to try and get him right in the majors with a 6-run lead, then
that's the thing. They did try to do that. You just can't do it because he couldn't do it.
No, what I'm saying, like there, I saw some more people again complaining. Well, what are you using Chad Green for? Yeah, he stinks right now. Well, he's on the roster. He was your best relief pitcher in 2017. He was still an absolute force in 2018. You're trying to get him right. 6-run lead is the perfect time to do that. And he can't do it. So now they send him to the minors. And this is a little interesting because after the game, Boone said, we're not sending him to the minors. And then
don't we just know that we don't listen to anything anybody ever says ever? Because it's 97% of the time complete bullshit.
So based on the timeline of all this, Boone was asked basically right after the game. And I don't think Boone knew that their plan was... He didn't know that was a plan. And then he backtracked on it later in the day and said, oh, after talking to the coaches, after talking to Cashman, we decided the best plan for Chad Green is to send him to the minors.
I mean, doesn't that make a ton of sense, though? They're not making decisions in-game to send a guy to the minors. They're going to have a talk about it. It's ultimately Cashman's decision anyway. So they have to go on there and they have to have a meeting about this, discuss the options. Who's in AAA? Do we have a better option in AAA? Is there someone that could come up and help our team right now and get Chad Green right? Because we need him in the long run. And I mean... So I don't know what if people are saying that right. Boone is controlled and this is where this is going because I feel like this is where this is going. No manager makes that decision in game and says, oh yeah, we're sending him down to the minor leagues.
No,
immediately.
I know that. But this is a rare moment where Aaron Boone spoke out of turn. And
he gave the safe answer is what he did.
No, he didn't. The safe answer is we're evaluating all our options.
Because then there's a hint of doubt.
Brian Cashman does not like any desertion among the ranks. He likes them to all be on the same page. So Brian Cashman, I bet, has a little sit down with Boone after this and says, listen, next time you're asked one of those questions, you give a vague answer and say that we have to discuss all our options because he does not want anything out there in the media, anything out there in the press where, oh, Boone is thinking one way and then Cashman and the nerds are thinking another way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't agree with that.
I don't think it's a huge deal.
I don't think that conversation happened. It was a little interesting
on the timing. But I also think it's because Chad Green is not right. He's not right mentally. Is AAA the place for him to get right, though?
Yes.
Because Okay, but don't you think also he can get away with just kind of being lost in AAA and still have results?
No, because, well, potentially, but I think there's just a different mentality. Like, one, the pressure's off when you're down there, so you can kind of focus on yourself, focus on your mechanics, focus on your mentality and what you're going to be doing while you're pitching. But two, I think you can build some confidence as well when you're going to go down there and you're gonna be like, yeah, I'm dominating these guys. I don't belong here. I need to get this right. Like, I think there's a different type of sense of urgency to fix it and get back up rather than just getting knocked down. Like, you can't stay up there. If you have options,
no.
And you're a guy that can be sent down and you come in with a 5-run lead and then a 6-run lead and you blow them and you give up a yeah. grand slam to get a team back in the game. Like, you can't be up there any longer.
Did you see the pitch too?
It was a change up over the plate.
It was an 87 a mile an hour meatball change up batting practice fastball in the middle of the plate.
To Justin Bour, like the one guy, yeah. Over around there that can absolutely hurt you.
The worry with Chad Green now is that he goes the route of Tommy Canley last year, and it's just he struggles early in the season, gets sent down to AAA, and we don't hear from him from the rest of the year.
I think they're very different people. When I see Chad Green and I see Tommy Canley, like, mentality, thought, like, when I just am reading their personalities, Tommy Canley is like a go, 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 go. Like, I don't know how you slow him down besides throwing away the Red Bull. And, like, even then, like, he's gonna try to sneak around you and get that Red Bull. Whereas Chad Green's just be like, all right. He's going to go sit in the corner and he's going to think about it.
Oh yeah. He seems like the most mild tempered.
Yeah. He's super, like, he's very thoughtful. Like, he's probably a deep thinker or
it was demoralizing when you looked at his body language walking off the field.
Yeah. I felt bad Tuesday. For him. I really did.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's a guy that says, I don't
help me. Help me.
Help me. Yeah. I'm so lost. Yeah, like, where I don't know what to do. He's a little puppy dog trying to find
I really want to do well. I want to do well. I want to do well for all these people and the guys in the dugout. I don't know how.
Yeah. And the bullpen numbers are being skewed a little bit by Chad Green and also by Holder. Those two have been the biggest culprits on the overall bullpen struggles. But you look at it, the starter's ERA is 3.33. That ranks fifth in Major League Baseball. And they've thrown 129 and two-thirds innings pitch. That's 13th in Major League Baseball. So they're a top five ERA pitching staff starters-wise and a middle-of-the-pack innings-wise. That is ideally where we want this rotation to be, right? Going into the season, if you told me top five as far as giving up runs and middle-of-the-pack for innings, I'd say beautiful. The bullpen will lock it down. They'll pick up the inning slack. But what we found is the bullpen is now middle of the pack as far as ERA goes with a 4.05 ERA. And I don't think innings pitch is really a great way to judge how they've struggled. So what I looked at is their whip, 1.35 whip. That's 17th in Major League Baseball. The bullpen is beating itself, which is also a problem.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not worried about the bullpen by any means. Like, there are some isolated incidents, like you mentioned with Green and Holder, and they've been atrocious. So they are very much skewing those numbers. Like, they've had a decent amount of innings too that are really affecting that sample size. If you look at who they are or what's happening, because they've been very, very bad. So when you're like thinking about the overall, how it's doing, like, I think Britton looks like he had a clean ninth inning the other night, like, looked really good.
Britton's been better.
I think he's starting to come around since
the Houston series, right? Yeah. Britton's been better.
Chapman, obviously had a bad game on, what was that, Monday night, but came last night, closed it down. You kind of expect him to be around the plate. And if he's not, it's going to be bad. So, like, Chapman is what he is. Like, there's nothing,
but he's allowed,
looks bad.
So he's had only two appearances this season that he's allowed runs in. So you're saying, okay, that's not that bad. But he's put a lot of runners on base, right, and he's put himself in some bad situations. So, yes, I know it's only two appearances that he's given up runs. And the Yankees, it really hurt the Yankees in both situations. One was the blown save on in the extra inning game. And the other one was he came in a ninth inning tie game, and the Yankees ended up losing it early in the season. So they've been sort of really bad instances for him, but there's been a lot of runners on base. He had a scary moment on Sunday at the stadium, so he doesn't look quite right yet. And then Ottavino, he had the one bad outing on Sunday, but I'm not worried about Ottavino. But it's just these certain instances of too many walks, too much beating yourself. It's not something I'm not going to expect perfection out of certain parts of this team, but perfection out of the bullpen is something we've come to expect with these guys.
We've come to expect, but when you're talking about Holder and Green, you know, while they were very big parts, Green especially 2 years ago, Holder, you know, had a breakout year last year. We're still not counting on those guys as much as we are some of the top tier guys. With Betances out, definitely you're looking at Green a little bit more. But you know, we've had Tommy Kamenly stand up and say like, I'm back, I'm good again. You know, let's do this. I think the biggest,
you stole Chad Green's mojo.
The biggest thing that the people want to know about though is what does your dad think about this bullpen? Because your dad's had some super hot takes, and we're still trying to get him on the show.
Yeah, so he added Chapman to the suck ass bullpen list, and he also doesn't like the bullpen coach. He doesn't know the bullpen coach's name, but he does not like the bullpen coach, Mike Harkey. I love
also
that
known
my
as
dad.
CeCe Sabathia.
Yeah. So the Yankees are on a 6-game winning streak, but you would not know it from my dad's texts because he picks out the one thing that went wrong. I have not gotten a text about the hidden ball trick yet. He maybe has not seen.
He probably has not
seen.
It was
a hidden ball.
There's a 0% chance your dad was awake for the hidden ball trick.
Oh no, my dad's in bed at 8:30.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. About. Like he hasn't seen.
But so as soon as he gets the update on his MLB app that Tyler Wade was called out on a hidden ball trick, I will tweet out whatever hot fire text message I get from him.
No, it's good. We still got to get him on for whatever reason. I don't know why, but like the hardest guest we've had to get on the show, it hasn't been, you know, any of the players, hasn't been any of the national beat writers. It's been your father.
Yeah. Well, you got to. I'm having a hard time getting through to his agent.
Yeah. Your mom doesn't answer the phone.
Herman, I mentioned briefly Herman. So on the season, 25 2/3 innings pitched, 28 strikeouts, a 1.75 ERA, a 2.88 FIP. So he, you know, his ERA is a little bit better than his FIP, but still 2.88 is fantastic. 0.82 WHIP. He's not walking guys. That was one of his biggest things early in his career last year, was he was beating himself with too many walks. His curveball has been absolutely unhittable. He made Albert Pujols look his age on that pitch on Tuesday night.
That whole at bat, I mean, that whole at bat was honestly he dominated Pujols in that at bat. It was
and
Pujols knew exactly what it looked like when he was walking away.
That's the moment when you're playing pickup basketball, and this is going to happen with you and Kemp, where you're going to dominate Kemp in a little one-on-one basketball, and then all of a sudden he's going to just run circles around you and lay one in. And you're going to say, okay, that's the moment where I know it's time to hang up those cleats, Albert Pujols. But his curveball has been, like I said, unhittable. He's his most used pitch at 34% usage. His wOBA is 145. You know, weighted on base average. That means guys are only getting.
Did you see the lost look on my face when you said?
Yeah, I saw it. So
I was like, I'm not wearing a robe. I'm not wearing a robe. I put some clothes on. I'm good.
Guys cannot get on base. They cannot hit his curveball. He's using it a little bit more than his fastball, and it's tremendous. We are seeing the evolution of a really good young pitcher.
Yeah. No. I mean, this is the thing. We needed him to clean up those. The extra outs. We needed him to clean up the guys that were getting on base and would get him into trouble with some of those long innings around the fourth, fifth, sixth inning, but primarily, you know, second to third time around. And that's what's happening. Like he's around the strike zone a lot more. And when you see Herman around the strike zone, then you're putting that much more of a doubt in the batter's eye as well, because now those pitches that have big swing to miss ratios, well, you better take advantage of him over the plate, because he's coming at you. You can't just wait for, you know, him to miss his spots and then leave a meatball over the plate. It's just not happening anymore, or at least so far. And that's the evolution of Domingo Herman. That's the evolution of him taking that next step, being more consistent and becoming a guy that can be in a rotation and relied upon. I mean, we knew this last year, like swing and miss percentage wise, when you're looking at the stuff, like some of the best in the major leagues, and that's not an exaggeration. Yeah. The numbers
say
it.
He ranked in the top, I forget the exact ranking. It was definitely top 20 among starters with qualified pitches.
It was higher than that. It was much higher than that though.
I think it was like 14th or something like that, but
it was impressive.
But you're talking about names like Jacob deGrom and Max Scherzer up there. Like, What one of these is not like the other, and it was all boom. Domingo Herman's name.
So the game that Voit hit two home runs out, he was talking to Marakovic afterwards in the post game interview. And she asked the question. So not talking about his offense, but what did you think of Hermann today? And it was the great word. It was disgusting. Disgusting. Because that's it. You just think of the most grotesque word you could possibly come out of your mouth. And that's what he was. Because when you have a guy that's around the plate like that and still can't be hit, then you know that guy's on a good roll and doing something really good. And there's that little bit of deception now. Like I told you, I love seeing that high changeup. It's one of my favorite pitches. And when I see Hermann with that high changeup effective and he can actually throw it, pull a little Bugs Bunny on you, then, he's in the driver's seat. It's fun to watch.
I'm waiting for him to bust out one of those El Duque Ephesus.
It's coming. I mean, like I made that comparison early. He reminds me of the El Duque, like in the way that he can mix things up and really change the batter's eye and all those things and the speeds he can really adjust. He's fun to watch. He's similar in that sense.
Luke Voit. And if Luke Voit's saying he's disgusting, Voit's got like a 35 consecutive on base streak dating back to last year. He knows if I'm going up against Hermann, I might not be getting on base. So that's a guy who's comfortable at the plate right now, feeling it with the home runs and the walks. And he's not going to want to face Hermann. Hermann also ranks in the top 5% in the league for overall WOBA. So I mentioned his WOBA for his curveball, which is absolutely disgusting, but he's got a 209 WOBA for his entire pitch arsenal. Very, very good. And he's a big reason why the Yankees let Gio Gonzalez opt out of his contract and go sign back with the Brewers. Because Gio Gonzalez was there for insurance. If another starter went down, or if Hermann was lost, or something happened, then they were probably going to have to rely on Gonzalez. But Hermann has stepped up, allowed them to let Gio opt out.
Yeah, I think the two things that were the keys to Gio were, again, Hermann or whoever was that other guy, it turned out to be Hermann. It could have been Sessa, it could have been whoever it was, it didn't matter. That guy had to be effective enough to get some length or just fill that fifth spot with some consistency, and the fact that CeCe's healthy. So I think those two things, the Yankees were looking for one of them. If one of them was not where they wanted it to be, that's when we saw Gio. I mean, it was an insurance policy. That's what it was. It's the same thing as our freaking boy down there, playing first base now for the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders. The most hated man in baseball for a while after making comments about Gary Sanchez and calling all of us stupid. That guy. I don't even want to say his name.
Well, I think it's interesting that the Yankees sign the man who shall not be named and then immediately have to bring back Gary Sanchez. They don't want them overlapping in any rehab games or anything like that. It might be some punches thrown. But from one Gio to another, Mr. Gio Urshela, he is turning into the Yan-Hervis Solarte of this season, picking it over at third base. Have you noticed that his favorite thing to do is make a nice stab at third base and then fall down as he throws to first?
Yeah, you have to make it look dramatic. That play that he made, I mean, it wasn't even just a fall. It was like momentum carrying him the other way, ball slingshotted across. It was just an unbelievable play. And he's making them routinely. Like, this guy's a phenomenal glove. And that's the thing. Like, when you're seeing some of these, you see that a lot, right? When you see the replacement players, a lot of times when you see a replacement guy, they're in the position that they're in because of their defense. Like, primarily backups are better, are known for their gloves. I'm not going to say they're better defenders, but when you look at their game, they're probably stronger in the field. Primarily, there's some exceptions to the rule
because they wouldn't be replacement hitters players if they could hit.
But that's the thing. You see a pretty good level of defense. So that's one of those things when you're looking at the replacement guys. Like, you're not seeing a fall off on defense. Like, these guys are still very, very good defensively. Tyler Wade adds better defense all over the field wherever he is. And when you see Urshela making those plays, people are like, I know that Andujar's coming back at some point soon. Like, we're seeing him hit. What's up with the labrum? Is he still throwing well? Because we got a guy right now at playing third base that's holding it down extremely well, and fans are starting to get behind. And I'm sensing a little bit of a turning of the fan base to, let's make sure that shoulder's healthy.
Yep.
Let's make sure that shoulder's really healthy.
if Andujar is healthy enough to play third base and come back, my only recommendation for him is just fall down when you throw, because fans will think you're really good at defense. When you, if you're always on the, if you've got dirt on the uni, right? Oh, that guy's dirty. Wasn't that always a thing in Little League? How do you remember this? How dirty is your uniform after the game or after practice? That means you had a good game or good practice if you're covered in dirt.
Yeah,
not necessarily. More of a, more of an rolling around out there.
More of a, yeah, more of an effort gauge.
Effort value.
Yeah. So I'm not trying to see Andujar falling around. I don't know where that ball's going to go. You know, like it's going to be ugly if he's falling around. Ursula, for whatever reason, has that balance. You know, he's able to. He's probably good in water sports. He can surf. He can wakeboard. He can do all these things where your balance is key. Andujar, I don't think he's getting up on that board. I'm not so sure about that. I think that that's an issue with him.
So do we care about Brad Miller? Because the Yankees signed Brad Miller in a little infield depth insurance, more insurance. He was DFA'd by the Indians. He somehow hit 30 home runs for the Rays a couple years back. But I don't know. I guess the Yankees is just another insurance policy if someone else goes
down.
Do
we care? Not today.
Not today. All right. It's been positive. We're feeling good out with this win streak. But, of course, we can't have nice things. No. Clint Frazier is going on the injured list. I mean,
and this broke last night. We're recording this we started at 6:30 in the morning on Thursday, and this broke last night that he's going on the IL.
It sucks on so many levels, because we've been waiting for Clint Frazier to get his opportunity. You don't love that it's because of so many injuries, but you do love that he's finally taking advantage of it. And he was on Monday morning when we recorded, leading the team in home runs and RBIs. He was an absolute force offensively. And then he gets his unfortunate ankle injury running the bases, trying to go back to second base on Monday night. He plays through it. He's got tape on his ankle. I'm going to read this quote from him after the game. "I think I could go out and play. I went through too much last year to not continue to stay out on that field. A lot of things would have to go wrong for me to not play. It's sore. It's a little sprain. But it's one of those things where, like I said, I went through too much last year to not go out there and play. The IL is too full for us, so I'm good. I'm going to keep playing." Obviously, it got worse on Tuesday. He wasn't in the lineup on Tuesday. He was available, apparently, to pinch hit. Boone said he's available to pinch hit. He didn't. Wednesday, not in the lineup, was sent for an MRI. And then what are they calling it? A partial tear in his ankle?
Yeah,
is that
what it said?
Saw?
Yeah, that's. I mean, you don't love to see that. Anytime you hear the word tears, it's not good. But you know, he stayed in the game. Said he wanted to keep playing through it. I like that a lot. Again, this is kind of the same thing we were talking about, Judge. Like, at what point do you want your guy to, not play through these injuries and just take care of themselves? And there's a fine line, I think, between all of this. And here's the thing: like, when you're seeing the team as they are currently continue to win, and they're putting these wins together, like it allows you a little bit more rope for something like this. Even though it's just another dude, you at the same time, you can't keep stacking them up and lose a guy long term. So no.
They just got Gary Sanchez back. What? So 13, still 13, yeah. On the injured
list.
Oh
yeah, you know who's still haunting us? Who's number 13?
Oh, Alex Rodriguez.
Still haunting us. I can't get rid of him.
You know where my mind immediately went? I was trying to think, what number is Chase Headley? What did he wear?
Chase Headley. You know, man on the street. He might be back on this team in a couple days.
Go listen to the 2016 episodes and you'll know how much I hate Chase Headley. But
he dominated a lot of talk in 2016. Way too much.
It's you know, last year Judge goes down, and without Judge, the Yankees were .565 winning percentage. You know, not bad, but they were .637 with Judge, so it was not the same team. So far, they're 4-0 on the season without Judge, so things are looking good. But yeah, how many more haymakers can this team take? Right, like we love that the team is winning with these scrappy guys, these replacement guys, and they're not all young. Like Gio Urshela is not a young buck. Mike Talkman's not a young buck. I know they're new. Talkman's a young major league player because he doesn't have a lot of major league experience, but he's in his late 20s. So, but these guys are banding together and winning. But how long, right? How long until the wheels fall off the wagon on this? And then we're saying, okay, when's Stanton coming back? Because he also had a little
weird news. Like, just strange.
Weird news. Like, just a little hand grenade drop.
It's a little kick in the balls. It's like, oh, tap you in the nuts, right here. Like, oh, you're coming back. Nope. Little nut snap. It's
I'm reading tweets. I saw this from Meredith. Giancarlo Stanton's bicep is now healed. Yay. Oh, but if reading, but he had a cortisone shot in his shoulder. Yeah. What the fuck? where did that come from?
It's similar to when we saw not as concerning, but yeah, you know, like when we saw Severino, all of a sudden, wait, it's not the shoulder now. Now we're talking about a lat. What are we doing here? Like, why are we still getting injured when we're not injured, when we're supposed to be resting? Like, how is this happening? It's a strange thing. Like, the bicep is, you know, it's connected to the arm. It's part of the arm. It's connected to the shoulder.
Apparently this
happened. This
was from what I've seen so far, this shoulder issue popped up during his rehab for his biceps. Yeah.
Not what you want. It's not one of those good things. We're not going to see him on the trip. Like, they're going to, apparently the cortisone shot, and then he's going to ramp up his activity when they're in Arizona. So, now we just have to wait to see how he feels when he ramps up the activity, because, you know, if we're seeing a timetable of, you know, maybe he's going to join the team after the series. No, that doesn't exist right now. Like, we need to see him do things first, and then we can talk about when he's going to come back, because I just don't believe anybody. Like, Hicks was out for 3 days. 3 days he was supposed to be out.
Hicks was day to day.
I will be there for the second series. Like, okay.
Yeah, and he had a cortisone shot. Dellin Betances had a cortisone shot, and now Giancarlo, cortisone shot. And it's good news that the Yankees got Gary Sanchez back, but you can't. But then you deal with the bad news of Stanton and the bad news of Clint Frazier, and still an uncertain timetable on Hicks. Judge with a serious oblique strain, which is kind of what we talked about last episode. And you guys should check out an article that Rohan wrote about if Judge was hurt before this. We kind of chatted about it, but some of the numbers might indicate he was, because his opposite field hit percentage was up 10% and his pull percentage was down 10%. So that could have been him favoring his oblique, possibly. He was still hitting the ball fairly hard, but it was noticeable how much he was going to right field.
I mean, we've seen that since the beginning of the season. He started off the season going to right field too. So if we're talking about that as well, I mean, we could go further back. I do think he was hurt. I don't know when the actual injury happened, but I think it was, again, I don't think it was like a, it was just one of those things you're trying to play through. And where's the line? Like, where do you, especially with Judge? Judge is the leader of this team. Like, he's the guy that people look to. You know, he knows that he needs to stay in this series. He knows how critical he is. And not just that, but, you know, as a leader, as an emerging leader, as the guy that's the face of this franchise, he's certainly trying to put his best foot forward and show that, you know, he's not going to just cower because of an injury that's minor. He's going to play through it. And I don't fault him for that by any means. Like, I want that from my leader. It's just where's the line? Yeah. And things get worse.
We love guys that play through injuries. And, you know, one of the conversations with the 10-day ILDL versus the 15-day is, did it allow teams to put guys that were banged up but maybe wouldn't have gone on the 15-day deal? You remember that whole conversation? Like, our teams taking advantage, but more willing to put a guy out for 10 days. Yeah. Okay, you miss a week of action versus 2 weeks, pretty much.
Right.
Because the 15, I mean, it's only 5 days, but it can make a big difference, because especially with this retroactive stuff, like, the Yankees could retroactively put Clint Frazier on the IL back to Monday, and then he could be, if all things go well, he'll be back for the next homestand. But that's if all things go well.
Again, talking in the spirit of the rules, because the reason why the 10-day IL or DL, it was the DL when it was implemented, was really the concussion protocol. Like, a lot of that was because of them trying to get guys clearance through these concussion protocols, and not having to put them on the 14-day DL because of that. So 15-day DL, sorry. But there's a reason why they were doing that, and I think they realized that, gosh, you're taking advantage of this. It's not working like we thought it was going to work. So we got to get rid of it again.
Yeah. There was also a very interesting, I guess is the word, article on The Ringer about the Yankees' injuries. So quick few stats from this. It just really highlights how much the Yankees have gone through. So 13 players on the injured list, as we know. It's not the most of all time at once. The Dodgers and A's back in 2016 both had 16 players on the injured list. But the thing is, it's never happened this early in the season. Like one after the other, like so early in April, the Yankees had all these players on the IL. So
and superstars, superstars.
That's where this comes in. Cumulative WAR on the injured list, the Yankees are blowing out the field. They had, when this article was written, 32.8 WAR on the injured list. If you look at their previous season, the other, the next team, the Nationals in 2017 with 21. So it's like not even, it's night and day. It's an all-star caliber lineup. That is not an exaggeration. It is, you can field almost a full all-star team of Yankees on the IL. And it's amazing. The Dodgers pulled through it. They made the playoffs in 2016. I still think the Yankees are going to make the playoffs this year. But if some of these injuries, the Judge injury, the Severino injury, and obviously Didi, we're looking second half of the season most likely for these players.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. The second half of the season is certainly when everybody's circling for these guys to come back. I think everybody's kind of forgotten about Didi. You mentioned Didi. Like, I think people, with all of these injuries, people are forgetting that Didi's like getting closer and closer to getting back. I just saw that he was making throws from shortstop. So you're starting to see him ramp up his activity too. And I've said all along, it wouldn't surprise me if we saw Didi come back early. He's just one of those guys. He's been an overachiever. He's pretty much an overachiever in like everything he does in life, it seems like.
Guy, Andrelton Simmons would not come back
early. Andrelton Simmons would definitely not come back early. Andrelton Simmons couldn't draw his way out of a paper bag. He couldn't take a camera and act like he's a, you know, Pulitzer Prize photographer. Didi, 100%. Like, he just picks it up and all of a sudden he's a phenomenal photographer. Like, the guy's an overachiever. Yep. So that's why I do expect him to come back earlier and ahead of schedule. But yeah, you know, I think here's the silver lining to me. Like, I'm looking at what's happening right now, and yes, we're winning. So we can say this, right? Because it's not doomsday yet because they're still winning. I mean, it's doomsday when you look at the names and you look at what's happening, but they're winning. So like, okay, we can kind of push through this, but here's the silver lining. And I think this is going to be a significant reason why the Yankees do very well towards the end of the season. We have all these guys down and now we're calling up guys that would be replacements, that would be potential late season fillers. And they're getting major league experience. They're getting all of this really good experience on the major league level, coming together, getting that chemistry down, getting all of this, all these things out of the way that they, you know, normally would not. They'd be playing in Scranton and you know, all over the different places, small cities. But now the depth on this team is going to be something that we've never had before. And when you see the top level guys on superstars, and then now you're adding all of these young guys who have already performed at the major league level, that have the ability to come up and really not skip a beat. So I think the depth on this team is really getting a massive boost.
It is, and I think it's not getting enough credit because if any other team in baseball lost the caliber of starters that the Yankees lost, I don't think they would be above 500 like the Yankees are.
Look at what the Red Sox are doing right now. Like, they have guys that are healthy, and they're not performing. But imagine if they were not. They are so top heavy in their organization that would be rolling out AAA guys, but it would not feel like AAA guys. It would feel a lot less than that. So there's a lot of credit here to be given to the Yankees organization and what they've done to, you know, to lack of a better word, to prepare for, you know, a disaster like this, because they do have talent in the minor leagues.
Speaking of the Red Sox briefly, did Nathan Eovaldi throw out his arm against the Yankees?
I was getting all sorts of tweets saying his arm is not bionic, not a robotic arm potentially. Yeah, I think
It's what seems to happen every time with Eovaldi is he has surgery and then it's bionic for like 6 months and then it just falls apart again.
How many surgeries can one arm take? I mean, really?
I don't know. It's two Tommy Johns. It's two cleanups. Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean,
eventually, like, how, you're gonna have to find new places to cut into, right?
Yeah, you can't use this vein, you can't use this opening letter, like, going through old wounds.
Yeah, it's like a heroin addict trying to find a new blood vessel.
What was the deal? It was a 4-year deal, right?
Yeah, 4-year, like, $68 million.
I love that. Dodgers, stay away. Stay away from the Red Sox.
The thing I want to see with these injuries, so you're gonna start getting guys back slowly, and I think that's going to be a little boost, right? You know what? You heard of the term microdosing?
Yes. LSD.
Yankees are going to micro
microdosing LSD. This is where my head went.
Or mushrooms. The Yankees are going to microdose with these injuries coming back. They're going to get Stanton back, and then a couple weeks later, they're going to get Hicks back. A couple weeks later, you're going to get Betances back, and then Severino's going to enter the rotation.
And then maybe Judge comes back.
Knock on wood. Knock on wood, please.
Knock on wood. And then Didi comes back, right? And then all of a sudden, okay, we're complete again. We're riding high. And as long as the team, I don't expect them to rattle off 10 game, 15, you know, 15 out of 20 win streaks with this team. But what I want to see is it is competitive play. And like if this team can be in the 520 winning percentage range once they get full force, I think that is a good place for this team.
I mean, I see a 6-game win streak and I want more.
You can't overreact to a 6-game win streak. Come on. I mean,
I know, I'm joking.
It's awesome that it's happening, but it's against 3 against the Royals and 3 against the Angels.
Yeah.
The Angels suck. Okay. They have Mike Trout and they suck. They're in last place in the NL West.
Their pitching is a problem.
The AL, of course, Matt Harvey pitches okay against them.
Yeah.
But the AL West is a competitive division and the Angels suck. And then the Yankees are going to play the Giants. The Giants suck. So, yes, a West Coast trip is hard, but at least they're playing suck bag teams.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. No, the win streak is one of those things. I'm joking about that, but you can't get too wrapped up in this because they're winning in unconventional ways. Like the whole rally in the seventh inning is just a perfect example of how this team is just putting things together, and there's a good mojo right now. So you just gotta ride that as long as possible, but it's most likely not sustainable, right? You start going up against major league competition that's at a higher caliber, and certain areas of this team will get exposed. There will be times when we're looking at Gio Urshela and not like swooning over him because he will show his.
He'll be falling down and the ball will be skipping past Luke Voit.
And maybe not even so much on the defensive side, but we're gonna probably see some bad times offensively with a lot of these guys, because that's why they kind of are where they are at certain times. But we just got to ride it, like you said, and be happy with what we're seeing. And hopefully they can just continue to grind, build that momentum, this chemistry thing, like the whole, you know, Iron Man, next man up mentality is the mentality to take. And I love it. I love the fact that they're embracing it.
Tanaka's on the mound Thursday in Anaheim, trying to complete the 4-game sweep. Then they go to San Francisco. The Giants push Bumgarner to Friday night so he could audition for the Yankees fans. But it's still Bumgarner, so that's going to be fun. Paxton versus Bumgarner. That's going to be an exciting
matchup. That's a good
matchup.
One, yeah, because Paxton is our Bumgarner from the offseason. He's the guy he's the big lefty. He's the guy that can be that guy, hopefully. So that will be fun to watch.
I saw some tweets that Herman, Paxton, and Hap took batting practice yesterday, and Paxton swung and missed on two pitches.
I don't want him swinging and missing at anything.
Be prepared for just bat on shoulder, please.
Yeah.
Do not run the bases. Do not pull a Ching Ming Wong. Do not pull a Masahiro Tanaka and blow up two hammies.
At one time.
Stay healthy, my friend.
Did you see that? You just said blowing out two hammies, and I just saw this last night. Did you see the video of Darren Rovell running the 40?
No.
Okay, look it up. It's ridiculous. It looks like his hamstrings are tied together. I've never seen a shorter stride in my life. And it reminds me of you know, that's what Tanaka would look like if he continued to run down the line, blowing out both hamstrings. It's bad.
He's doing a three-legged race with himself, but he's only got two legs.
It's very strange to see. I don't even know how to describe it. It's like his legs don't operate, but he's still moving. I don't
Yeah, so I mean, it's positive things going into the San Francisco stadium. Have you ever been to that stadium, San Fran?
I've walked past it. I haven't been inside.
In 2016. I was 2015 or 2016. I was there for work, and I got. I was there for a conference, and the Giants and Dodgers were playing. This was in September. It was late in the season, and both teams, I believe, were out of the playoffs. Then it must have been a different year. Anyway, tickets were $5. I got $5 tickets, and I sat in the upper deck. And I watched Giants versus the Dodgers, which is a heated. That's like a Yankees Red Sox
for $5,
kind of atmosphere, because those are two big rivals out in California. It was great. It was a great ballpark. Maybe my favorite park that I've visited. I don't know. I know it's not a popular opinion. I like Fenway a lot too, but San Fran right up there. So if you guys have a chance to go, definitely recommend it.
Yeah. I mean, you can. Everybody, we can all shit on Fenway. The history of that place and the it's a cool ballpark. There's no doubt about it. And like, it's so small that it's a fun place to watch a ball game if we're just looking at it at that. It's going to be a big one. You know, like I want them to go and I want them to dominate San Francisco as well, but we'll see. We got the, you know, if Mike Ford's of the world can continue to rake and get good at bats up and work walks and hit in timely positions and continue to hit the ball out of the ballpark in certain circumstances, I think they're going to do well. It would be nice to see them get to Bumgarner. I think that would be just like another really good shot in the arm for this young team. And you know, they're going to get up for it. You know, they're like, look around us. We're going against the mad bum. Like, what if
Gio Urshela, let's get him. Mike Ford, yeah. Mike Talkman, yeah. Tyler Wade going to go up against Madison Bumgarner.
I love it. Yeah.
Maybe the nastiest pitcher in playoff history.
And the funny thing is now with the roster and in the situation that it is, we have the most balanced lineup that we would probably have all year long.
So ready, you gotta love that ready lefty.
Yeah, and now, whereas you know, we were like, if we're going up against Bumgarner,
you'd stack all those beefy righties though.
Nah, but we have good balance now. So we're, you know,
You think of Sterling's Ford home run call, which was essentially a Ford car commercial?
I'm wondering how much money was underneath that table.
If Mike Ford, I don't know what
it was, a tri-state area. Ford commercial, by the way, the tri-state area dealers. Ford commercial.
If you're a Ford dealer in Westchester or something, how do you not just run with this?
Yeah, well, I mean, they do those commercials all the time on radio on WFAN too. It's the tri-state, you know, Mercedes Benz or whatever it is. So they group together, pool money, and they go at it so they can try to as a conglomerate and try to advertise. So yeah, they're. I mean, like the Ford dealers are like, pickup trucks are flying off the lot.
F-150s all around.
Yeah,
it's couple things before we wrap up this episode. So George's Box came out on Wednesday. I think it was their best episode.
Yeah,
the guys got a little heated. There was a lot of debate.
Yeah,
a lot of f-bombs. Well, so yeah. if you're listening with children, maybe some earmuffs.
Don't listen to that show with children.
But it was a fun show. I was on JJ's side with a few debates. I was on Keith's side with some other debates. So really good stuff out of them for their most recent episode. Just search George's Box in Apple Podcasts.
New and noteworthy in all of iTunes in sports and recreation too, which is awesome to see. They're on the front page of iTunes, new and noteworthy. So you know, there's been a really good response to the show. People are subscribing and rating and reviewing, and that's awesome. So it's good to see, and we appreciate all you guys, you know, supporting us at Bronx Pinstripes and everything that we're doing. It was a big deal for us to push this next show, and you know, we're happy with what's happened so far. Still, also, if you guys listen to the show and you have not rated and reviewed our show, first of all, what's wrong with you? Have you not been listening to us? That's all we ask for. Please rate and review our show. Go into iTunes right now, pause the show, and give us a 5-star rating and review. And let's do this. When we did this last year, often I think we should get back to it. We got to give back to the people. We're going to give away some t-shirts. So leave a good review and we'll read a couple of them next Thursday show. And we'll give away some t-shirts. So if you go in there and give us a rating review, again, we appreciate it.
Yeah, and we're also starting to... There's a lot of new things going on with Bronx Pinstripes this year. Obviously, we've been talking about the chapters. Watch parties all over the country. I know Vermont has one coming
Tampa
up.
Tampa has one this week as well.
Tampa has one. We saw the Philly crew out, Salt Lake City crew out. So a lot of awesome things. Join the BP Crew Facebook group if you have not already done that. Then you can find what chapter, what city you're in. They're popping up all over the place. Yep. I feel like every 10 minutes there's a new person saying, hey, what about Austin, Texas? Right. Hey, what about Minnesota? Hey, what about Montana? So it's awesome.
And that's how it starts. It starts with a couple people and then it just continues to grow because, you know, it's like a fly trap. You know what I mean? Like once that stickiness is there, the rest of them will start coming. And once
there's
you're there,
Yankee fans are everywhere.
Yeah, you'll multiply.
And videos. So JJ's been doing the Stadium Eats videos. He was a little drunk for the last one. He was wearing half of his food, half of his drinks. Go check it out. He was eating his way around Baltimore and around Camden Yards. So those went up on all social channels and on YouTube this past Tuesday.
It's appropriate. We drink at the baseball games. We all drink. So we got to know what happens and where we got to be. Where? What are you going to eat after you've had 6 beers? You got to know these things. These are important details of being at a ballpark.
I say every time we have an event, I'm not going to drink too much at the pregame party. And then 6 beers later, mm-hmm. I'm walking into the game, yeah. and I'm like, oh, Leanne's going to kill me again.
These are tall boys. Yeah, yeah. No, it's. I mean, it happens every time. It's okay, though. That, you know,
without fail.
It's fun. It's fun. You know, drinking is fun. Drinking beer is fun.
Go check out our Facebook. If you guys are interested in all the videos we've been doing, YouTube page or Facebook page, just search Bronx Pinstripes. All the videos are there. They go out on all the social channels, but they're easier to find on Facebook and YouTube because they're all grouped together. The Stadium Meets videos go out every week. Dom's doing his This Week in Yankees baseball recaps every week. We're putting out more game recaps of us, plus the interns are getting involved. Hey, the next man up.
Next man up mentality has been going for us for a while now. Like,
Tyler crushed it on Monday night, 3 a.m. recap. Dom last night with a recap. It's awesome. We're getting more people involved, more video. Scott and I have some plans for some more video as well coming out, so go subscribe to all those channels. We appreciate the support, guys, with all that we're trying to do. You know, like we said, we started this recording at 6:15 in the morning because I got to go to work now. So West Coast baseball, now I got to go to work. So this is fun.
Kemp has been awake for 25 minutes, and I can't believe we have finished the show. I literally cannot believe it because he's sitting there reading a book. Well, looking at a book. He's not reading it.
I was going to say, damn. You got a smart kid.
That kid reads
over
more
there.
Books than I do. There's no doubt about that.
All right. That's going to do it for this episode. One more in LA, and then we're on to San Francisco to kick the crap out of a couple crummy teams, and hopefully they hit Bumgarner. We will talk to you Monday.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.